space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Isn't it always the way that when you're about to get married on a starship, potential war breaks out? We're going to be talking about Balance of Terror. Clay, how are you?
I am good. I have no opinions about this episode.
All right, we're done, guys. I give it a... we'll get to our ratings, I guess, at the end of the episode. But yeah, it's kind of one of those episodes, right? This is considered to be a classic of the original series.
I consider this to be the best of the original series. I think this is the best episode.
What we're going to be talking about is obviously Balance of Terror, as I said. It was written by Paul Schneider, directed by Vincent McVitie, something like that. This episode is the Enterprise battles a Romulan ship suspected of destroying outposts near the neutral zone. We're going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back, and we're going to break down this episode, which is a wonderful episode. It's called Balance of Terror.
This is the captain speaking.
In our next action, we can risk neither miscalculation nor error
by any man aboard. Listen carefully. Science officer?
Referring to the map on your screens, you will note beyond the moving position of our vessel, a line of Earth outpost stations. Constructed on asteroids, they monitor the neutral zone established by treaty after the Earth-Romulan conflict of over a century ago.
As you may recall from your histories, this conflict was fought by our standards today, with primitive atomic weapons and in primitive space vessels.
Which allowed no quarter, no captives. Nor was there even ship-to-ship visual communication. Therefore, no human, Romulan, or ally has ever seen the other. Earth believes the Romulans to be warlike, cruel, treacherous. And only the Romulans know what they think of Earth.
All right, Clay, I know that you've been, it's either champing or chomping at the bit. I think you can say one or the other. To talk about this episode, which you hinted before that little audio break, that you consider to be your favorite of the TOS episode. So why don't you lead us off in the discussion about this one?
Well, I think this is the best episode because it starts with the, it starts off the long tradition of weddings on the Enterprise being disrupted by some sort of violence.
Yes. That's something
that's
we can all
afford. Yeah, that's my entire thing. No. I think this episode is, you know, I'm going to be interested to compare them when hopefully I get to cover City on the Edge of Forever. Is that what it was? Yeah. As well, because that one is pretty much universally cited as the best Star Trek episode, and I don't think that it is, because I don't think that the story of that is at all unique to Star Trek. Like, it's just sort of like, welcome to space planet, generic space person. Would you like to go back in time? Whereas this one actually has, I guess you could argue that it's kind of an adaptation of like a submarine book, I think. One of those submarine books that were written after
World
War
II. It's heavily based on The Enemy Below.
Yeah, I was going to say like Below the Depths or Enemy in the Sea, you know, one of those things.
It's based on Hunt for the Red October, which came out in 1990.
But I think what this episode does really well is it gives you pretty much the entire breadth of what Star Trek is about in one really tight, really engaging story.
Yes.
It covers intergalactic treaties, war, maintaining peace, the horrors of war, racism, general xenophobia, danger. It just has everything. There's no comment on like sexism in here.
No, but, and there's aside no, from there's that, no Shakespeare. I don't think.
Yeah, there's no Shakespeare. Oh man, they need a Shakespeare quote. This is sort of the dry run for the last act of Wrath of Khan, I think, which they also fixed by having Wrath of Khan say from from hell's heart I stab at thee, or whatever that line is, which I believe is a Shakespeare line. So they tightened it up where they needed to for the movie. But I think I just think this one is, it's just great. I mean, it's got Kirk being a really competent captain, but it's also got him second guessing his actions.
Going against, I would consider an equally competent captain, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, and having to make a decision that could possibly jumpstart a galactic war, and it's just, and you even have a scene. Once again, probably one of the better scenes is the briefing room scene where everybody's sort of talking out the problem and everything, and even Spock is like, "No, I think we should shoot these guys."
Yeah.
And Kirk doesn't want to do it. And that's what's really so great about this is Kirk and the Romulan captain are both don't want to fight each other.
Right.
But they also are going to do what they have to do to protect their ships and protect their people. And in the Romulan's case, he's surrounded by kind of proto-Klingons who are all about war and killing everybody.
Yes.
Yeah. And on the Enterprise, they're not about that, but they're still like, we should probably kill these guys.
I think it's interesting, right? Because the motivation between the two crews is a little bit different.
Yeah.
If anything, I consider the biggest narrative problem to me is that the Romulan commander doesn't make a lot of sense to me, given that he's the commander of what they say in the episode is the flagship of the Romulan fleet.
Yep.
He seems a little bit too apathetic to war to be in that position.
Yeah.
And so the Romulans are acting aggressively against the Federation, which is okay.
You mean the Star Service?
Yes, the Star Service, sorry. And they're acting aggressively against the Star Service, which is because that is the nature of the Romulans, we're told. Kirk and company are acting aggressive to the Romulans because they're basically being defensive about it. And Kirk is unaware of the willingness of the Romulan commander to just walk away from it, which he can't do because he's duty-bound to do it. Because, as you said, these are sort of proto-Klingons in a way. Are you a little bit surprised that the Romulans are actually the longest-running, regularly appearing species on this show, besides, like, the human-type thing as antagonists?
Kind of a little bit.
Klingons don't come in for till the end of season one.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that does surprise me because, I mean, when I was a kid, it was always Star Trek was about Starfleet and the Klingons.
Yeah.
You know, it was the Romulans. I remember when I was a kid watching Star Trek, Romulan episodes were kind of like just the ones that didn't have Klingons in them.
Yeah.
It was the Klingons were like the main adversary. I think it's probably because I think I watched the movies before I got into TNG, and the Klingons are basically the only villain in the movies, aside from Khan.
Yep.
So I think they were just stood out as being the more recognizable villain. And also because I think at the time when I was watching Romulan stuff and I was like, oh, those are just kind of looks like Vulcans. They're not very creative.
But yes.
I didn't realize that there was a fantastic reason for that, which is put on display in this episode very awesomely.
Do you want to mention that? I bring that in as we can sort of segue that point into the Romulan discussion, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that the other thing that's great is so the standoff that they have here with the Romulans is bolstered by the fact that they explain the neutral zone, which was also really helpful because I don't ever think I actually really knew what I knew the neutral zone was a Romulan Federation thing, but I don't think I knew the extent of why it was there.
Okay.
So it was just one of those things. It's just, yeah, it's the neutral zone. You don't go in there.
Yep.
So they actually explain what the neutral zone is, which is, you know, the no contest zone that was
negotiate, like the negotiated. DMZ, basically.
Yes, the DMZ that was negotiated after a war between, I guess, the Federation and the Romulans like 100 years ago.
Just humans and Romulans. There is humans a difference.
Humans and Romulans, yeah, okay. Yeah. And the cool twist to that is that it was so long ago and the technology was so primitive compared to what they use now that they have no idea what they look like. They've just been shooting and killing each other for however long in this war that lasted 100 years, and they never, ever once saw what the other one looked like, which I think is fan-fucking-tastic.
Yeah, they negotiated the treaty via radio, is what they say. Yeah,
it's awesome. I love that plot detail. It's amazing.
It would go on to hamstring Star Trek Enterprise, felt the need to put Romulans in a few episodes, but were also unable to show them. Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think I was a bit surprised at how much groundwork this actually lays down. Like, you talked about the neutral zone, and it talks about the Romulan Earth War, which was done with atomic weapons, and why we haven't seen the Romulans going into the neutral zone in TNG in a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that it does a good job of, you almost learn more about the Romulans in this episode than you learn in any of their subsequent appearances.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Like I think if one other criticism I would have is that they're a bit too on the nose as Roman analogs.
Yeah.
The fact that they call each other like Centurion and Praetor and things like that, it seems a little bit forced. But the other thing that we obviously learn is that they are an offshoot of Vulcans, which is a nice little touch that will continue to be a big deal going forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic reveal as well, because it's sort of a throwaway line, but there's that character...
Styles?
Styles. I was going to say Riley, but he's the last one. Whose family had been... Part of his family had been killed during the previous war. So he has a ingrained,
he can hold a grudge.
Yeah, seriously. that's like some flying the Confederate flag shit. Right,
yeah,
there.
That would be me being upset about my Union ancestors being killed by a Confederacy. It'd be like, wow, that guy can really, really hold on to that grudge.
Well, I mean, your father's British, so that's why you just don't trust Americans, right?
Right. I mean, he obviously would have been aiding the South as the British were wont to do at that point. I like Styles because he continues the role that TNG never had, but TOS has all the time, where whoever is manning the helm is a lippy bastard to everybody else.
Yeah, that does seem to be a rotating seat of assholes until Chekhov shows up. But yeah, they set him up as having a grudge towards the Romulans to begin with, and then there's a sort of throwaway line, but it's not, they don't really follow up on it. I guess in the original script there was more to do with this, but it's just sort of there now, where he mentions that the reason that they managed to effectively blow up the space station was because they had the plans or something. They had Federation plans, so
there might be
a spy on the ship.
Yes, and, yeah,
but
they
don't know,
and it comes out of nowhere in this episode. Yeah,
I was reading on IMDb in the original script. There was more that played out a little bit more, but they decided to cut it.
Oh,
which works great because I feel like it's kind of like a head fake for what the story could have been. Like, you could have done a whole story that was just trying to figure out who the traitor was, if there was one.
Right,
because
right.
Because you don't know what they look like.
Yes, yep.
But they give you the twist by showing you what they look like, and they look like fucking Spock. so, like, the entire bridge, kind of, except for Kirk, all turn to Spock, and are like, And the look that Nimoy gives is just sort of like, oh, fuck.
He logically sees that this is not going to work out well for him. He's got a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, he's like, I wasn't expecting that, but I understand it.
I love that that touch. It's weird that it's a holdover from a previous script because they bring it up here, right? But they don't, besides Styles, who clearly is kind of a little bit unhinged, no one else really holds it against Spock. They immediately buy his explanation as to, oh, they're probably just an offshoot of Vulcans.
Yeah, he really slips that one in with no research done whatsoever.
Just spitballing here, guys, but I didn't do anything. They're clearly just, they're kind of my relatives or whatever.
It's like he said, well, if there's one thing I know about people who may have grown up in New Jersey, where I also grew up, it's like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so they kind of, toss that over. I was a little bit surprised. I'm glad you told me that, because I thought that they brought up the spy angle very quickly and with no reason to bring that up.
Yeah.
Because as it stands, they don't need plans to blow up these stations because they have the super weapon that does it. So there's no reason to be concerned that they actually would have a spy on the ship with them.
But right.
Yeah, they bring up this Vulcan-Romulan relationship. Everyone seems to buy it a little bit. Stiles gets very angry with Spock, which will be a running thread throughout the rest of the episode. But after that, it basically evolves into a submarine game where I think that depending on how much of a Trekkie you want to be, this it has combat that is unlike anything else we're ever going to see in any of the series going forward.
Which I appreciate, because I think I think it's built more for this kind of combat.
Yeah,
I don't think dogfighting with Galaxy Clash starships is very interesting.
Yes,
And I, you know, it's one of the things that I've talked about many times is the size of things that you're working with here, and requires a certain on TV requires a certain understanding of like distances, because you know you got to have all these ships on the screen at the same time, but it doesn't make a lot of sense because they would be you know way further away and everything. The way they handle it here makes a ton more sense.
Yeah, to because well, so I'll just describe for people who are sort of unsure. Like it's done in the submarine battle, which I would basically describe it as. It's a lot of maneuvering between the two sides that can't quite figure out where the other person is. And when they fire a weapon, you have time to react to the weapon fire.
Yeah. Which I think is more, I mean, I can see why the other version is more exciting because it's very instantaneous. And, you know, you get that excitement from when a Klingon ship decloaks, you know, 30 meters in front of the Enterprise for some reason.
Yeah.
But I think this is a lot more appropriate to the kinds of ships that you're dealing with.
Yes, and the distances that they're clearly. Yeah, gonna, it's a yeah.
Like Star Wars is more aerial dogfighting. Star Trek has always been submarines and like battleships kind of.
Yeah, and I kind of like it too. It reminds me very much of Battlestar. Galactica, the way that the remake handled combat was kind of similar to this. I think that if you view it as a Trekkie, I'm not disagreeing with you, but if you view it as like a Trek fan, it's kind of got like a lot of one-off sort of funny lines where they're like, we can't see them. We're relying on our sensors to tell us where they are.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, do you mean to tell me that you have someone just basically looking out the window to see where ships are, or why aren't you relying on your sensors the entire time? It's that kind of a thing. But I think they handle it pretty well here. I think that it's not super clunky and that I'm not distracted by the cloaking mechanism of the Romulan ship. I think they lay a lot of great groundwork as to why the Warbird isn't overpowered, because it can't do anything when it's cloaked, basically.
Yeah, I thought that was a great way to make the cloaking device fair.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you can't shoot, and what else can't you do? You can't...
They can't go to warp at all, which is interesting, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but they...
Well, didn't... I think, unless I misunderstood it, doesn't Scotty say that they just have impulse power?
Yeah,
they
just
don't actually have warp power?
Yeah. So they're extremely slow moving. They can't fire, and they also can't use their sensors very well. I keep saying sensors because that's how Spock says it all the time. They can't use their sensors, so the Enterprise is kind of able to hide from them as they're able to
hide. They can't see anyone. Yeah. I think that's a great way to make the cloaking device fair.
Yeah. You know what? I was a little bit surprised by this whole thing. The Enterprise has the upper hand for a good amount of the battle.
Yeah.
Which is surprising to me. Narratively, you'd expect that the Romulans would have the upper hand until the very end when Kirk saves the day.
Yeah, you know, I found a little bit... So the one gripe I would have about the story, and I was trying to decide whether or not it mattered, is unless I missed it, they don't give an explanation as to why the Romulans blow up the outpost, do they?
No, they don't. I don't think there's any motivation for what the Romulans are doing.
Yeah, I feel like... there should be.
Yep.
So I guess I'm of two minds about it, because, I mean, if you don't have – on the one hand, it's more realistic that you don't know what the motivation was. So it's like you don't have – you as a viewer don't have the luxury of making the moral decision about what Kirk should do.
Right.
Because, like, if it was if it was known, at least to the audience, that the Romulans blew up the outpost because of some sort of aggressive tactic that the outpost took towards them at first, or something like that, that justifies what they did, that makes you think about Kirk's actions completely differently than if you don't know why they did this. So Kirk's reaction is also in the dark. So his path that he chooses could be completely justified, or, you know, misled, or yeah.
See, I think it's actually kind of a flaw of the episode that they don't say what the Romulans are doing, because only because I think that the episode is going to great lengths to show both of the captains as being upstanding people.
Yes.
And I think that if the Romulans had a reason, like if it was revealed at the end that the Federation — Kirk didn't know about this — but that the Federation was using these outposts as sort of like missile, you know, like launching pads or something, like some kind of like Cuban Missile Crisis type thing.
Yep.
The Romulans attacking them would make more sense. And it would give you — at that point, it ties into the whole thing of both of the captains are still duty bound, because Kirk has to defend what he might even consider to be like an improper act by Star Service or whatever the fuck they're called at this point.
Yeah.
And so I think it would give a nice layer of — I guess it's basically because I think the Romulan commander's motivations are a little bit too hazy, especially when his personality seems to be one that he really doesn't want to be doing any of this in the first place.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they should have had some sort of explanation for exactly the same reasons that you said. Yeah, the Romulan commander is defined by, you know, he doesn't want to be in a fight as much as Kirk doesn't want to be in a fight, but he is also defined by honor. So it's the kind of thing where it's — I feel like he probably was doing that. They attacked for some reason, but you don't get any notion as to what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even if it was something like, you know, the Romulan — I feel like it would even be feasible for it to be like the Romulans told him to do that, but he himself didn't want to do it. You know, that one of those kind of things. Because the rest of his crew is very, very hawkish, it seems.
Yes, yeah, they're very gung-ho about this.
So I could see it being a situation where, you know, the Romulan War Council or whatever told him to make this strike, but he didn't want to do it.
Yes, that, yeah.
So he's conflicted about the actions he's taken, the same way that Kirk is, X, Y, and Z, you know.
I think that's an easier way to if you wanted to write the episode that way, that's an easier fix, I think, because that needs like one line of dialogue, which I don't think we get at any point. Do you recognize who the Romulan commander is as an actor?
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's Mark Leonard, who will go on to play Sarek in a whole bunch of episodes.
I did read that he is the only person to play a Vulcan, a Romulan, and a Klingon.
Yes. Is he, or is he the first person to do it? He might be the only person.
I thought it said only, but okay. Maybe it said first.
Because he'll play this, obviously. He'll play Sarek, and then which Klingon is it? Do you remember?
I forget.
I think I think it's a movie somewhere along the lines.
Yeah, I think he's in the first movie.
Okay, yeah. It's a fairly big accomplishment. I remember mostly as Sarek. We are going to be covering Journey to Babel on this, and that's his first appearance as Sarek in the original series. What'd you think of the Romulan Warbird design?
It's not the best. It's fine, I guess. I don't know. I don't think it's different enough from the Enterprise.
Like, yeah.
It's the same kind of saucer thing with the little handles on the side.
Yep.
The Klingon ships get a little bit more interesting.
We get no sense of scale, which I thought was kind of unexpected. I guess you never see a shot where the ships are next to each other.
Yeah, that's the kind of problem that you run into, I guess, with having your show take place in the vacuum of space, because there's nothing. If you're having a fight in the middle of dead space, there's nothing to use as a reference point for size or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that is one reason why I can understand why they would, you know, put two ships on the screen at the same time kind of thing. Otherwise, it's just like this episode where it just sort of like shows up as a blip on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's just got like a sweet Pontiac Firebird on the bottom of it.
Yeah. I like how they mentioned that they're painted. That's how they know that they are Romulan ships. They paint their ships the same, which hasn't changed. Styles is an expert on things that happened 100 years ago. I think it's important because I like it, the Romulan bridge design compared to the Enterprise, I guess.
You know, honestly, I didn't really think about it that much.
Didn't care.
It was red, right?
It's like pink, kind of.
Yeah.
They wear gold uniforms with pink. I think that it's interesting, if only just because it seems like they needed a small amount of space to get this done, so they put all of them standing around one central computer type of thing.
Yeah.
But I guess you could symbolically see it as not the open sort of... one thing I've been impressed about TOS is that Kirk asks for a lot of advice a lot of times. He'll sort of go around the room asking people what they think about things.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Romulan ship doesn't seem to really be that way. It's much more of like a direct sort of one commanding unit thing, and everyone else is just kind of around the computers and stuff like that.
Yeah. This... you know, it's another thing that has made Kirk a lot more interesting to me than I thought he was, because he traditionally is seen as the, you know, the man of action, the brash, chances taking, you know, wink and a runaway kind of thing.
Punch a god. That's the Kirk character.
Punch a god. Yeah. But the last couple episodes we've watched, he's very he doesn't make decisions lightly. And he definitely takes into account the thoughts of his crew and his fellow officers. And like that, again, that briefing room scene I thought was great.
Yeah.
Especially when even Spock in his logic ends up being kind of racist. Because well, he's like, if I know anything about what my people are like, then you should probably shoot these guys.
I'm surprised by Kirk too, in that I guess I describe him as much more decisive than Picard, but he similarly looks for ideas. I get the impression that Picard sort of takes all of these suggestions and melds them into one sort of outcome. Kirk sort of goes around the room and says, give me your best idea, and then he decides what the best idea is to do.
Yeah, like my memory of Picard is more like people coming and telling him stuff, and he's like, okay, do it.
Right, yeah.
Whereas it seems Kirk is a lot more of a weighing options kind of person.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my memory of Picard might be getting hazy.
Doubtful. It can never be hazy. Yeah, no, I think that it's a fair sort of summary. They're similar in a way that I wasn't really expecting. I'm really just surprised by the amount of input that Kirk takes from everybody in a sort of a very obvious scene, like the briefing rooms and when he's on the bridge asking for people's opinions and things like that.
Yeah, I love that stuff, and I also love that he's not afraid to still be a captain. Like, he still will knock somebody down if they speak out of turn, but if they're, you know, if he's welcome to it, then he'll let them talk as much as they want.
Right, yeah. He's much more quick with the discipline towards people who kind of step out of... People step out of line a lot more in TOS, I feel, that there's a lot of people just sort of telling Captain Kirk that he's wrong and this is the reason they should be doing things.
Yeah, I know. On the IMDb trivia, one of the trivia points for this episode was the way Stiles responds to Spock borderlines on insubordination. That was just a trivia piece.
Well, when he comes in and Spock's like, do you need any help down here? He's like, fuck off, Romulan. And then he just leaves. He doesn't write him up or anything. He told his superior officer to basically just go screw.
Yeah.
And then in the cruelest twist of fate, Stiles is not the one who dies at the very end.
Yeah. I mean, you could see that coming a mile away, because those two were really way too happy about getting married.
Yes. What do you think? Is that portion of this show necessary? Does it add anything that you don't recognize? Like, I ended up thinking through this whole thing, only one person died, kind of.
Yeah, that threw me off because at a certain point, I think it was after they get hit with the nuke, because apparently the Romulans have a nuke.
Yes.
Like an old school nuke. Kirk asks Bones for a casualty update, and he says like 25 or something like that. So I guess it's the general usage of the term casualty.
No, I think it's like 25 with radiation burns. But
specifically
I don't think
that?
Anyone okay. dies in that attack. They just get injured.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I think having only one guy die might be a little bit too much. But if that character had died as just part of the few who had died, that would make more sense.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But just singling him out as the only guy to be killed is, I don't know, I don't really see. Doing it specifically that way, I don't see how it benefits anything.
I'm glad that Kirk was managed to restrain himself from hitting on the widow at the very like I'm glad there was no awkward period where it's just like, oh Jesus, he's being a little bit too sexy.
It's coming.
Especially after we watch Conscience of the King, and I think he's making like sexy smirking eyes for about 35 minutes of that episode.
And oh yeah, and he also has like hot lady spider sense. Because that first scene in Conscience of the King where the girl shows up, like he turns to the door before she's even in the doorway.
Yeah.
He's like, what? I mean, hot lady.
Player's got game. Yeah. She just showed up and he's willing to tell her to leave this party 30 seconds after.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. Your father's not here? Well, my friend's not here either. Do you want to go somewhere?
Let's go wander the alien landscape together.
I will say that they did notice, man, they were heavy on the Kirk eye lighting in this episode. He had that like...
what do you think of that?
It reminds me too much of the way they would light Bela Lugosi when he was Dracula.
Yes.
Where it would just be shadow from the nose down and the forehead up and just light on the eyes. I think it's a little bit too much for this.
Do you notice also that they do this other weird 60s thing? All the women close-ups are slightly out of focus.
Yeah, they got that nice gauze filter to make everybody
like
look
very
airbrushed.
Soft. Very, very soft on them. And it's I find it weird. And the light thing is okay, except when it's super noticeable sometimes, and it's not understandable why the lights would be like that.
Yeah, they do it too much in this episode. I think you can get away with doing it maybe once or twice for like accent purposes.
Yeah,
but I think they do it too much here, because I think they even do it during the wedding sequence. I think in that first scene they do a close-up of Kirk and he's got the Bela Lugosi light on him, and it's like,
it's not necessary at all. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about Balance of Terror? I think it's a great episode. I think it's certainly one of the best of the first season, probably of the series as a whole. Do you think that it's, well, you had kind of mentioned that you thought it was a good summation of Star Trek, so you don't think it's too not Star Trek-y. You think that it takes a unique spin on what makes the show actually Star Trek and wins with it?
Yeah, I think it uses all of the elements. So it's tough because I think at this point Star Trek doesn't have an ethos yet. The fact that you have characters who are being racist to each other in the Enterprise should tell you that they haven't Roddenberry hadn't
thought of
taken
that
whatever drug he took to make him think he was the god of the future.
Yes, he hadn't met L. Ron Hubbard yet at this point.
So I think what this does really well is it takes all of the elements that are fairly unique to Star Trek and just really synthesizes them really well. The one place I will say that I think that they should have done a little bit more is I don't love the sequence where the writer just forgot he was writing Star Trek and just started writing a submarine battle.
Okay.
Where both of them have their engines off and Kirk is like, Spock, work very quietly. Any sound that you make, they'll be able to hear. And then he like leans on an alarm button.
Yeah.
And the Romulans are like, oh, we got him. We found him. That's a little bit too much just straight up a submarine battle.
Yeah, because I don't understand. A, they're in space, and noise won't go through space. And B, I thought everything was off, and that's the reason why they can't sense each other, because the sensors aren't working because the thing is cloaked or whatever. But they do that, and then that gives Stiles another chance to just give a shit-eating or a shitty look to Spock, who accidentally set off whatever that alarm was that he was doing.
Yep. The I will say though, before we recorded this, I just threw a tweet out there after as I was watching the episode, saying that I think this is the best TOS episode, and someone responded and said, that it was a toss up between this one and Corbomite Maneuver, and he thinks he might prefer Corbomite Maneuver because it has the same. It's got the same synthesizing of all of the great elements, but it has more of the optimism that the show is more known for.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting way to think about it. I hadn't really thought about it that way.
I don't know if I'd agree, but I do think that Corbomite might actually be one of the best summations of the show to this point. Like, it's a very much of this is what Star Trek is.
I guess it's – Sorry, go ahead.
Well, the Balance of Terror is more of a, this is what Star Trek is told through a very specific narrative style.
Yeah, I think that's what it is for me, too. Like, I get the same feeling from this episode that I do from Best of Both Worlds Part 1.
Yep.
Where it's just everything firing on all cylinders and making a really interesting, exciting show. Where I think, I don't think that you can discount what Corbomite Maneuver does just because it might not be as exciting.
Right.
But I don't know. For me anyway, I think it's if you're trying to tick every box, I think Balance of Terror pretty much does that for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're going to take a break. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back and give our final thoughts and ratings for Balance of Terror.
Captain. Standing by to beam your survivors aboard our ship. Prepare to abandon your vessel.
No. No, that's not our way. I regret that we meet in this way. You and I are of a kind. In a different reality. I could have called you friend.
What purpose will it serve to die?
We are creatures of duty, Captain. I have lived my life by it. Just one more duty to perform.
All right. Balance of Terror, the ratings. Guys, if you're on YouTube, you can click in the upper right-hand corner of the video. There's a little box or a little circle up there. You click on that, poll will come up, and you too can vote on what you think this is on a scale of 1 to 5. Clay, how about you go first?
I give this one 5 Pontiac Firebird hood paintings.
I would also agree. I will give it 5. I'll give it 5 failed wedding ceremonies out of 5.
Because there's going to be a lot of them.
There's going to be a lot of those things. I was thinking of, I guess that woman works in like the phaser banks or something, and her husband is also her commanding officer.
She's a teller at the phaser bank.
He was about to make a withdrawal at the phaser bank. That's something that'll die out. Certainly in Next Generation, we didn't have crews that were just dedicated to firing the phasers. Although phasers in this episode are much more like torpedoes than anything else.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I kept wondering why they didn't use photon torpedoes, but I guess they didn't exist yet. But I did love my favorite part of the episode was when Cesar Romero's Joker shows up towards the end when the box explodes in crazy purple knockout gas for some reason on the side of the wall.
Very, very toxic. Spock has to run in and save the day.
And he does that thing, that like 60s acting thing. I don't know why that a lot of these guys did this, where they just really exaggerated a lot of their movements.
Yep.
Where he has to hit the button on the desk and...
instead of going around.
Yeah, instead of going around... with Stiles, who's on the ground, he like very exaggeratedly leans over him so he can like tap the button with his hand when he could have easily just walked 2 steps around him.
It's all about that blocking in these episodes, I guess.
I've noticed that these past couple have had some pretty good blocking in them.
Yeah. Yep.
Like there was one shot specifically, I think in this episode, where it was like a really nicely composed Spock Spock in the foreground, Kirk in the middle ground, and Scotty in the background.
Yes.
Yep. That they ended up after like a short camera move. It was really nice.
I'm glad you reminded me. We're obviously not doing all of these episodes as podcasts. And I think that we, at least in general, the way that the episodes are laid out are skewing a lot of really great episodes early on. And then by season three, it's a lot of famously bad episodes.
Awesome.
That's just kind of the way that Trek worked. It's kind of the opposite of TNG. But I, in my spare time, because I apparently am a colossal idiot, I've decided to just do sort of short write-ups on all the episodes that we're not doing.
Oh, I assumed you were just going to watch them and then scream into the void.
So we can, you can go to thepenskypodcast.com, and if you go to like the TOS section, there'll be a TOS write-up section. And the podcasts that we've done have been good. So I've been watching the other episodes, and a lot of the direction in those episodes is very bad, which is interesting to me. So it's kind of a, I guess we have to be conscious of the fact that we're watching some of what are considered to be the very strong episodes right now.
Yeah.
Because Charlie X, I think, is like a disaster of direction, and it's not a very good episode in general. But it's interesting. You guys can go check it out if you're interested in what I think about those episodes.
Season of three wasn't Roddenberry involved at that point, right?
I think he was.
Oh, I thought there was some thing where he was. They took the show away from him at that point.
Let's see here.
I could be wrong, but I thought I remember hearing that in a documentary.
To us, season three. I mean, he because they would have brought him back for the movie at that point.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't really say anything here. I'll have to look that up, and we'll have an answer for that later on. But that's it. Balance of Terror. I give it a 5. Clay gives it a 5. It's one of the a great episode of the original series, and I think that it is one of those sort of iconic episodes.
To be fair, also, I have not watched all of the TOS episodes, so I might be biased in my opinion of this one. So if there are any other contenders that people recommend that they think might be better, and that they might think that my rating of this as the best is due to the fact that I haven't seen them all yet, please recommend them, because I'd love to see them.
Yeah, and
if not, go fuck yourself.
And I'm just thinking of
sorry, we'll take that out.
I'm just trying to think of the big ones. It's like City on the Edge of Forever, Balance of Terror, Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think we'll get to that when we get to it. But
is that a good episode?
No, it's not a good episode.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I always thought that was just kind of like, oh, that's where the furry things come from.
Yes,
isn't that cute?
It's a I don't think it's a good episode, but we're certainly going to be getting to that one. It leads
to a great episode. Naked Time or Naked Now?
Now is not as good.
Yeah,
I don't think it also in the Next Generation of whatever the Naked Time or Naked Now, whichever one is the TNG version, is not very good. Tough.
I don't even think that Space Seed is very good, to be honest with you.
No. They're funny for that they led to better things than what the episode actually is.
The coolest thing about Space Seed is like the last scene in the episode where Spock says, you know, it'd be really cool if we came back in, I don't know, 15 to 20 years and saw what these guys were doing down there on that planet.
Foreshadowing. But yeah, guys, let us know in the comments or send an email to us. Let us know what what you would consider to be the top contender for the best episode of Star Trek, the original series. Like, Clay, this is on the spot. What would you consider to be your top episode of TNG? All good things, still?
Personally, yes. But if you're going body of the general body of the show, I mean, it's either Best of Both Worlds 1 or Cause and Effect. Is that the ship blowing
the
up
ship
one?
Blowing
yeah,
up,
probably
yep.
that one.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm fair like those. I don't have like super hot takes on those ones. The other one would be Yesterday's Enterprise is obviously a good one.
Yes.
It's obviously probably number 3 for me.
Yeah. Cool. Guys, let us know. If you're on YouTube, like in the comments. Appreciate it. If you're on iTunes or other podcatchers, you can rate us there as well. We'd appreciate it. Facebook.com/ThePenskyPodcast. Patreon.com/ThePenskyPodcast for a couple dollars a month. Go ahead.
And the one where Beverly Crusher has sex with the ghost.
Oh, yeah, of course, Sub Rosa. Which is, that's the, it's the most sort of disparity in the voting on the YouTube results for that one.
I will fight someone who tells me that is not a great episode.
They're out there.
You hear that, Tana? I'm coming for you.
they're out there. Otherwise, go to patreon.com/thepenskypodcast and give a couple dollars a month to get extra content. We just talked about RoboCop. We're going to be continuing the RoboCop Balance of Terror as we continue on to two and three. And I guess we'll close this out. But yeah, thank you guys very much for supporting the show. Thank you for listening, all that stuff. I think Balance of Terror is a great title. I don't know if it's a great title for this episode. What do you take on that?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's a really good, really good title, but it's sort of, I don't know. I feel like their titles so far haven't been great overall.
I feel that they're all great phrases for titles, but they don't tie into the episode.
Yeah, like I still don't like Corbomite Maneuver as a title.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I just don't like it.
I think I'd agree with that. TNG took a much more like poetic turn, where TOS is much more of like a very pulpy title that you'd see in like a jagged circle, like a speech bubble, like they put jagged lines around it. That's it, guys. Thank you very much, Clay. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
And you'll be back with, I think you have you'll have Space Seed and City on the Edge. I think will be your next one. So
sweet.
That's it, guys. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you later.